2 of that 590 show coming at you live on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com. Matt Berger and Matt Rocchio alongside John Giamatti Rudolph behind the dials, joining us on the Belmont Automotive phone line, fresh off his two-week honeymoon. He should now be looser than cream corn. Very happy, very ecstatic. Kevin Brackett from RealSpoilers.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. Giamatti really missed you, Kevin.
Oh, thanks. I missed you guys, too. It's good to be back and talking movies. It was a great honeymoon, but I missed being on the radio.
Stop it. There's a lie right there. Come on. You'd rather be on the radio with us than in Florida with your with your new wife? Come on. Flattery will get you nowhere, sir.
I never said anything about rather, but I got you. Miss you guys.
Well, it's good to have you back. Let's get right to it. One of the biggest movies of the summer, Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk, which is a battle, a World War II battle along the French town, or in the French town of Dunkirk, between the Allied forces and the Nazi forces. And this is before the United States really got involved in this, in World War II. A lot of people anticipating it because I think Christopher Nolan is the second best filmmaker right now working today. Obviously, Martin Scorsese, in my opinion, is the best. I think Christopher Nolan is number two, but he's gaining ground fast. Your impressions of Dunkirk, sir?
Well, you know, and what you mentioned is true as far as Christopher Nolan's clout. He's a great director. I think he's up there and will go down in the history books with the likes of Spielberg, Scorsese. You're right. Nolan has made a tremendous name for himself, and he's a very talented director. When you described what happened surrounding the Battle of Dunkirk, clearly you know about the story and haven't seen the movie, because if you had just seen the movie, you wouldn't know any of that. And that is one of my biggest complaints with the film. Highly anticipated, great director, technically a very well-made film, but you have to be a history major or a World War II buff, or at least familiar with the subject matter to learn anything from it, because the movie, although the visuals and the sound mixing and all that technical stuff is so good, but the biggest problem is that they don't give you a good story. And, you know, I just don't think that the art of filmmaking, which I believe is heavily the large part of it, is storytelling. And I don't think this film does a good job of telling the story. So that was really my biggest complaint. You know, the movie starts off very strong. There is a lack of dialogue throughout the film. And a lot of people leading up to it kind of compared it to a silent film. And at first I thought maybe that would be impactful, and as bullets and bombs are whizzing by you and you hear the sound, it's a very loud movie, I thought, yeah, this builds the tension, this is working very well. So at first it was okay, but as the movie went on, it just didn't connect because the lack of dialogue and the lack of character building, and really it felt like a bunch of war scenes just strung together, so it just didn't do it for me.
So Christopher Nolan didn't do a very good job of making you feel any kind of personal connection with any of the characters that he's introducing in this film. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. And
okay.
How can you without dialogue, without names? Right now, I can't even tell you the character names in this film because they don't talk to each other. They're not introduced. You don't, you know, it doesn't matter. When I tell you about this film, I'm not going to tell you about this guy's name or that guy's name because it doesn't matter. And honestly, to tell this story, you're talking about 400,000 Allied soldiers that were waiting to be evacuated from France. So it's not necessary, you know, in particular to tell you the names of these individual characters. And I'm not saying that you needed to make it work. But the problem is that there's no one to connect with. There is no focus. And so if we were to have connected with a few of these characters and gotten to know them, then their fate would be more impactful in the end. But that's not what this movie's about. This movie is basically split into three parts. You have the soldiers waiting on the beaches of Dunkirk. You have the English learning about the events and being called into action by Churchill. We're talking about civilians where Churchill has put a call out to come rescue and evacuate some of these soldiers. And then you follow an airman who the main character is played by Tom Hardy, which interestingly enough, his face is covered the entire movie, not unlike Bane in The Dark Knight Rises.
So that's true.
It's an interesting choice.
You can see it plenty, though, in Inception.
Yeah, exactly. So those are the three stories. And even though they're telling you three different stories with three main characters, I guess you could say, you never connect with them because you never really get to know them. Again, I don't even know their names. You just don't feel that connection. And so although the war scenes were amazing from a visual standpoint and the audio mixing, this movie should win an Oscar for sound mixing. It is incredible. But that's not enough. The audio visuals aren't enough to make me go, this is an incredible movie. And I can't imagine anyone watching this for a second time.
Wow, that's a little disappointing because I know a lot of people, especially two people in the studio, who are really looking forward to your thoughts on this movie and seeing this. Now I think you may have talked them out of it.
Well, and I was in the same boat as well. Again, Christopher Nolan, the guy, again, his name is up there with the greats. You know, we're talking about a guy I was introduced to him through Memento.
Yes, same here.
Phenomenal film.
Yes.
One of my favorite movies of his is The Prestige. I think it's so good. I like all the Batman movies. I like Insomnia with Robin Williams and Al Pacino. Inception was good. Interstellar, I know that some people are kind of iffy about. I still enjoyed it. So, I mean, the guy's a great filmmaker, and I was very, very excited to see this movie. But I think I was looking for more of a, I don't want to say traditional war movie, because I don't want to go to the theater and see the same thing over and over again. And you got to give him credit for trying something new. But I was at least looking for a story. And although there was a semblance of a story there, again, these three little mini stories, it just wasn't the story that I expected, and it wasn't a complete story. And so that's really at the core of it. It's a lack of emotion and a lack of connection to characters, which makes the movie boring. And that's so strange for a war movie with explosions and gunfire and amazing sounds. I mean, you really felt like you were there. And there were times where my heart was racing. I was on the edge of my seat, especially in the beginning where I didn't know what I was getting into. And I thought, man, these action scenes are phenomenal. And then more and more I realized that's all I was getting was just action scenes strung together. And like so many big budget blockbuster movies, action scenes are great, but when there's no story, when there's no character development, they don't have the same impact as they would with a good story.
Another great director who is still with us is Clint Eastwood, and I think one of his most underrated films is Letters from Iwo Jima. I think that is maybe one of his best movies, and the reason why I love that movie so much, I mean, I had a grandfather who fought in the Pacific in World War II, and when I was a child, I heard many horrible things about what he felt about the Japanese people. So when I'm watching Letters from Iwo Jima, I'm in the movie theater, and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this because you're watching a World War II movie from the point of view of Japan. And about halfway through that movie, you realize that, you know what, these Japanese soldiers, they're like American soldiers. They're just told, there's the enemy, here's your gun, go kill them. I mean, they really don't have any vested interest in the outcome of this war other than they just want to get out alive. I mean, the expansion of the Empire of Japan really doesn't do anything for them. So, like, halfway through this movie, you're watching a World War II movie, and you're rooting for this Japanese soldier to make it home alive.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I think that's a perfect example of what character development and a good story and a good script can do, because you felt that way, but you never thought you would have felt, but they got you invested in the character. And, you know, aside from the character development problems with this movie, you're talking about a scope which was gigantic. The event of Dunkirk, you're talking about 400,000 Allied soldiers. You're talking about the English and the Belgians and the French all over there, trapped and surrounded on all sides by Germany. And the significance is that if they were to have lost these soldiers, they wouldn't have been able to live to fight another day. When the Americans joined up, we wouldn't have had an English army to fight with us. And so history would have been completely different. And this battle is so significant. But again, the movie never tells you that. And so again, I give him credit for trying to do something different, but they don't really even give you any subtext. They don't give you any really intro as to what's going on. There's no dialogue to even feed it to you. And I hate exposition that's spoon-fed to you. But again, there's not even a little bit of a discussion. And at the end of the movie, when these soldiers are evacuated, the scope of the movie makes it seem like there's several thousands of soldiers. Like, it doesn't even appear to be tens of thousands of soldiers. And we're talking about 400,000 here. So it just doesn't do a good job of explaining why Dunkirk was so important. So if you're going into this movie fresh and you want to learn about Dunkirk and why they're making a big summer blockbuster about it,
you have no idea.
No, you're going to go see it and you're going to say, wow, that airplane looked cool. Those bombs looked cool. Those guns looked cool. I mean, it sounded cool. But you're going to go, okay, you know, what did this mean? And you know, I'm not saying they need to make a History Channel presentation here, but there's somewhere in the middle where I feel this movie would have been much more effective.
Kevin Brackett from RealSpoilers.com joining us on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. The other big movie right now, the number one movie in the United States, is War for the Planet of the Apes, directed by Matt Reeves, who also did Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. The last three ape movies have been really well received. The critics have loved them. They've done really well at the box office. And this one, like the other two, it seems to carry on that tradition.
Yes, all three of the films are fantastic. So, you know, these are films that obviously are based on much older movies. You're talking about the original with Charlton Heston. And, you know, those were, at the time, very, very well-received movies. You watch them now, and, of course, they look a little hokey, but they were very, very popular. And the first one still holds up if you can get past that. You know, if you showed it to a kid today, they probably wouldn't get it. But if you go back and watch it, they're good movies. The story's good, and, you know, there's a lot of meaning, obviously, hidden in there, and as most science fiction movies have. But they rebooted this movie, and with the rise of the Planet of the Apes, and the CG is phenomenal. Andy Serkis, who played Gollum in The Lord of the Rings, he, of course, plays the main character, Caesar, and the motion capture technology is so phenomenal. And what they do is they get you to care about a CG character, which is not an easy thing to do. I know I've talked about it before, and the overuse of CG can be very distracting, but what these movies do is they get you to actually care about the apes. And I found myself throughout all three of these movies, really, but especially in the last two, where the apes are starting to build up their forces and kind of create their own army and eventually fight the humans, where you're rooting for the apes, which seems like a very strange thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like human. It's like Letters from Iwo Jima all over again. Yeah. You're rooting for the Japanese soldier in a World War II movie.
Right. I mean, you're hitting the nail on the head. It's the same idea that they've gotten you to care about these characters in these situations that you wouldn't naturally think you would cling to, but they do such a good job of it, and you start to see it from their side, and you're rooting for them. But really, the advancements that they've made, and especially in this latest one, the CG is so photorealistic. Talk about audio and visual, you know, both of those are phenomenal in this film, but yet you have the story and you have the characters, and basically what this is all leading up to eventually is, I'm guessing they're going to try to get to the point in the first movie, which, you know, I don't want to spoil it for people. It's, what, 30, 40 years old now, but, you know, it's called the Planet of the Apes because apes have taken over, and you're trying to figure out what has happened to humanity. And so these movies are basically leading up to that point. And it's really well done. It's a strong trilogy. I would put it up there with Lord of the Rings.
Oh, wow.
Compared to recent trilogies. I think these movies really are going to hold up and stand the test of time. And I will be very excited to see more of these with the creatives that are behind them.
Do you think there's more coming, or is there going to be another film? Have you heard?
You know, there's nothing announced yet, but based on the box office figures, like you've mentioned, they're making a lot of money. And again, critically, they're very, very well received. So you've got a winning combination there. I know that this story is set up as a trilogy, and it could be a standalone trilogy, but I can't help but to think that they're going to go and the third movie, not to spoil too much, but it doesn't lead up to the events of the original. So it's that would be much further in the future, I believe. So we don't get to that point, and although there are no plans on paper right now, I'm sure they have to be looking at these box office numbers and going, yeah, we've got to figure out how to get these to actually tie together.
I think Tarantino said that he thought Dawn of the Planet of the Apes should have won Best Picture. Like, he wasn't even joking. He loved that movie that much. He was like, that's the best film I've seen all year.
You know, it is a really, really good movie, and I can't remember at the time if that would have been a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, what it would be up against, but it is phenomenal, and I watched the first two again leading up to the newest one, War for the Planet of the Apes, not to be confused with a movie called Battle for the Planet of the Apes, which was one of the original sequels. So I've gone to Battle. This one is The War. But, yeah, I watched them all. And I will tell you what, do yourself a favor. If you haven't seen the third one yet, go buy, rent, and buy them because you'll probably want to watch them again. Watch those first two movies the same day if you can or in the same week. And to watch the character grow, in the first one, Caesar is born. And the second one, he is gone out on his own and he's meeting other apes and building this clan or, you know, his family, so to speak. And in the third one, he's really progressing to a point where it's eerie how many of his traits are similar to humans and how much he's evolved. So watching him in that way is really impactful. And again, as a whole story arc, it's really neat to see that trilogy.
If you think Hollywood's not is going to leave out the chance of having one of the Chris's, Hemsworth, Evans, Pratt, in like 8 years from now doing a redo of getting to shoot, you blew it up, you bastards.
If get you your think, hands if, off me, you damn
if
dirty
you
apes.
You think they're going to let that opportunity pass them up over the next decade? You're crazy, Kevin Brackett.
Oh, no. They, you know what? They reboot and make sequels to some terrible films and do a terrible job with it. I'm telling you, these apes movies are 3 for 3. So, again, you've got the box office. You've got the critics behind you. You've got the people behind you. There's no way they don't. So
what do you think
I'm
of that?
Sure you're right.
They'll bring it up to that with another movie, and then I think they'll do one where it's kind of a... It's the redo of the Charlton Heston kind of time frame.
Well, I mean, the one that Tim Burton did back in the early 2000s. He remade Planet of the Apes, and it was terrible.
Tim Burton's action movies are like Schumacher's action movies. We don't talk about them. Okay,
that's a good point.
We ignore them.
Well done.
Well, we also we ignore both of those guys' action movies. We don't talk about them.
Well, it's funny. I mean, you talk about the Burton Planet of the Apes movie, and then you see that there's 3 successful films in this reboot after that. So, yeah, they kind of swept that one under the rug.
Much like the Schumacher Batman movie.
Oh, my God.
You look at those, you're like, well, this is a dead franchise, and yet here we have Christopher Nolan. Here we had Christopher Nolan turn into a masterpiece again.
I forgot what movie I was wanting to watch, but I had to watch the last 10 minutes of Batman and Robin.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. It was so awful. Just
now,
okay, I normally like George Clooney in every movie, and he was such a terrible Batman. He was acting like the Batman who didn't want to be there. He was just kind of like, let's go get Mr. Freeze.
Nipples on the breastplate.
I mean, nipples
on the breastplate,
just
man.
The most
that's the part
uninteresting Batman
that's the,
ever.
That's the part I can't get behind. It's the nipples on the breastplate.
Yeah.
No, well, I'm so glad you mentioned that, though, Matt, because it's funny. I was just having this discussion online when someone mentioned Clooney's Batman, and he is the worst Batman. I mean,
awful.
Bruce Wayne, okay, George Clooney is Bruce Wayne. So
no question.
I could get behind that, but he's the worst Batman ever, and I think Val Kilmer was a great Batman. I would rather see Val Kilmer any day.
Yeah, Val Kilmer was a little wooden. But, I mean, George Clooney, he's just not an action guy. I mean, neither was Michael Keaton. But Michael Keaton kind of pulled it off because...
See, Keaton's the least Bruce Wayne Batman ever. He's
yeah.
the least buyable Bruce Wayne in that the way... He's the complete opposite
he's not
of
suave at all.
He's the complete opposite of Clooney in that he was the perfect Bruce Wayne Batman. Keaton wasn't
right.
a good Bruce Wayne Batman, but he was even better than Clooney.
I think honestly still Keaton is up there. If he's not my favorite Batman, he's one of them. But I think he may be my number one Batman. He just something about that Batman, he was serious and I know the Bruce Wayne part was a little wacky, but I still like it. And that Batman was so menacing. It was such a dark film and you gotta give Tim Burton credit for that. And he basically made the first legitimate superhero movie, and I don't think we would have what we have today without him.
I think you're right. And Tim Burton, the thing I like the most about
step
the two Batman
earlier joke,
what's that?
Step all over my earlier joke, you bastards.
Yeah. Tim Burton, what I like the most about the first two Batman movies that he did was that he really incorporated a lot of film noir in those two as well, kind of like a little like Blade Runner.
Yeah, for not being a comic book guy, and Tim Burton has gone on the record saying he doesn't like comic books, and he says, I'm paraphrasing, they're for kids or they're silly or whatever. He's not a comic book guy, but he did pay attention to a lot of details of the Batman character, and I think he did a lot of things right, and he made some great movies that were worldwide phenomenons before other movies did that. I mean, those were some of the first movies that took off in the way they did, and especially made it cool to go to the theater and talk about superheroes and everything. So he was really impactful in that way. And although he's had some stinkers as of late, Tim Burton has a pretty diverse history of filmmaking, and there's no doubt he's a talented guy.
I'll tell you what, he had to get a lot. That had to be a lot of pub considering Nicholson. When you think about him as the Joker, that had to be big because when you talk about him being in a Batman movie, that kind of had to help him along. When you talk about making it cool to go to the theater, had to help it.
Nicholson as the Joker was the best thing about that movie.
Oh God, yes.
Oh yeah, he's phenomenal. People give that movie crud because you know they think, oh yeah, it's hokey or whatever. But honestly, if you go back and look at how dark it was, and you have to think about the time, 1989 when it was released, and it was an edgy movie at the time. And in my opinion, it still holds up. And they do some pretty dark things. The Joker.
Yeah, it has a pretty good dark comedy in it too. You know, like he would shoot somebody and say, you know, I'm going to need a minute or two alone, boys. I mean, he's got the best one-liners in there, too,
the,
you know.
The script had to be good because it was, again, you were getting Jack Nicholson into a makeup room for an hour before filming. Yeah. That had to take some real lines there for him to sink his teeth into.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm hearing that Ben Affleck may be out of the... They're going to do another Batman reboot, I guess, after the Justice League is done. And now I'm hearing that Ben Affleck may be out as Batman. What are you hearing?
Yeah, that's the word from Comic-Con. So, you know, right now it's just rumblings. But supposedly they're saying that inside sources are really thinking that Ben Affleck's going to be out. But I was just about to tie it all together here with our discussion that Matt Reeves, the director of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and War for the Planet of the Apes, is the one who will be directing the new Batman trilogy. So Ben Affleck or not, we've got this talented director who's made the last two Apes films, and he's shown he can do the dark stuff, and obviously CG is no issue, and these stories are so good. So I don't want to see Affleck gone. I think he's a good Batman, and I'd like to see him under the direction of Matt Reeves. But either way, I feel like Batman as a character is in good hands here.
As awful as Suicide Squad is, I think... Jared Leto was a pretty good Joker. I liked him as Joker, but that was a terrible movie.
That's what you pulled away from that movie, was Jared Leto was a good Joker?
Okay, well, obviously Margot Robbie was sexy as hell.
I just thought...
I even don't like girls with that much ink, and I thought she was really sexy.
And I don't know if Brackett's is getting this. That had to be the oddest interpretation on the Joker I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, Matt.
No, I liked
know.
It. I liked it.
You might have just lost a couple points in my book. I thought that was one of the most terrible things I've ever seen.
No, the movie is god awful. The movie is terrible.
His Joker was weird. His Joker was terrible.
He had a ha 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 tattooed all over him.
I liked him. That was the dumbest interpretation of the Joker.
Better than Cesar Romero, damn it.
Like the cartoon. The Batman cartoon is a better Joker than Jared Leto.
Caesar, no. I would take Caesar Romero any day over that Jared Leto Joker. That is one of the most atrocious performances I've ever seen, and the most odd character interpretation.
The movie was bad.
100% down with him on that one. I agree with you 100% on that one, Brackett. That one, that was off-putting from the get-go. And the weirdest thing was is they leaked so much of his tattoo art, trying to make it like seem like he was going to be like this cool character, and that their iteration was really interesting. And then we got all the stupid stories that Jared Leto was pulling this really lowbrow Heath Ledger crap where he was sending his co-stars like used condoms in the mail and stuff like that. Like they really tried to pump up Jared Leto's Joker as this awesome creepy dude. And I thought everything about Suicide Squad just needs to not be talked about.
I can't. Are they really going to make a sequel?
Oh, they are. And, I don't want anything to do with that one. So, Matt, you're going to have to go get a ticket for one and watch your buddy in that movie, I think.
Okay, look. I watched it when it was on HBO, when it was free for me because I subscribed to HBO. I'm not going to pay money to see Suicide Squad 2 because when I did not like the first one. I'm just saying I didn't think Jared Leto was a bad Joker. That's all I'm saying.
Agree to disagree, right?
Absolutely. What can we look forward to next Friday? You hate Back to the Future and the Karate Kid. I don't want any lip from you.
All right, fair.
In addition to Dunkirk, the Valerian movie. I don't know if you've heard of this one, but
I saw some previews for it. It looks pretty cool, but it looked kind of like it's marketed to teenagers. So I'm like, you know what? I'll wait for it to come out on HBO.
Well, this movie is actually one of the inspirations for Star Wars. It's based on a graphic novel from the 50s, so it's actually supposed to be pretty influential. I believe it's a French graphic novel, but it's called Valerian, and it came out this weekend, so I'm going to check that out, so I should be able to talk to you about that. But the new movie next week is Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron, and it looks awesome.
Well, yeah, because she looks awesome.
A really quick point on Valerian is it's really interesting when these movies run around, because I feel like these movies that get built the way that it was have a very similar way they go down, which is that this is a movie that the director who directed it has been sitting on for like 25 years. Ever since this is like the first thing when he got into Hollywood he wanted to make, but it was one of those stories where the technology, he never believed it was enough to actually accurately make this story. And then after seeing Avatar, he jumped at the chance, okay, the technology has finally reached this point. We've seen stories like this that get shelved for a long time for whatever reason. And something, and we just see to see, I just think over and over again, aside from when it is James Cameron doing it, those movies don't seem to do that well. Maybe it's because the director just gets so many ideas over the years that he gets kind of inside his own brain too much. But that's the interesting part about Valerian to me, is just how long this director has been waiting to make it.
Now, and this is Luc Besson, so I mean, he's a guy that's been around for a long time. He directed some of my favorite movies, Leon the Professional, and he did The Fifth Element, which would be the most closely related to this as far as sci-fi and the futuristic stuff. So he can make a good movie, but you're right. I don't know if maybe there's too much going on. It's getting mixed reviews right now on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's around 55 to 60%. So, you know, it's getting mixed reviews, but I'm going to check it out, and I'll let you guys know what I find next week.
All right. Looking forward to having you back on next Friday to hear your review of Valerian. And I'm really looking forward to hearing about Atomic Blonde, because something tells me there's some pretty hot scenes in it.
Well, you know, it's also directed by one of the directors who directed the first John Wick movie, so they obviously know action, and he was a stunt guy on The Matrix with Keanu Reeves. So this guy knows his stuff, so I think we're going to get some great action scenes.
Sounds good, Kevin.
All right. See you guys.
Yep. Have a great weekend. That is Kevin Brackett from RealSpoilers.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. Did he dissuade you two from seeing Dunkirk now?
No.
I'm still going to see it. I kind of wish there was more dialogue, though. Like, I was kind of hoping for like a Saving Private Ryan type war movie.
Sure.
With,
yeah,
in regards to dialogue, but I'll definitely still see it for sure.
I'm sure it's going to be beautifully shot. Every single one of Christopher Nolan's 100%. Movies look absolutely amazing. And I mean, the one director I would compare him to, I think he kind of reminds me of Stanley Kubrick, the way that he kind of directs some of his movies, and the way that the subject matter of his movies reminds me more of Stanley Kubrick than it does anybody else. Let's take a commercial break. Then when we come back on the other side, Rocchio and I are going to talk about Kyrie Irving demanding a trade out of Cleveland because he is tired of playing with LeBron. He wants to go someplace and be the man himself.
What
is going on in Cleveland? What is going on in the NBA? Why is this league so entertaining? You're listening to That 590 Show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com.